I have no relationships to disclose. Just a little bit of a context for food insecurity in New York City. The slide you're looking at shows you the rate of food insecurity in New York City as a whole. To your left is a table that shows you citywide in the five boroughs rates as far as Feeding America numbers are concerned for 2011. And to your right is a map that shows you the five neighborhoods that we're mostly in. And as you can see, rates are pretty higher in our neighborhoods than they are citywide. Ranging from about 14% in places like Staten Island to 27% in Brooklyn. So it's a pretty serious problem in our city, and so we are trying our best or doing what we can to try to reduce those numbers as we go along. The 2012 numbers are out from Feeding America, and it does show some a drop in these numbers, but still pretty significantly high. Okay, so the World Food Program has identified four dimensions of food security as food access, availability, utilization, as well as stability. And throughout this presentation, I'll walk you through what we're doing specifically to try to address each of those dimensions of food security in New York City. Food access. So how do we address that? Two main areas I'm going to focus on during this presentation are things like, you know, how we've increased food accessibility in New York City. As many of you will know, you can't talk about food security if you're not talking about how accessible the food is to those you're trying to get the food to. So we walk through a number of trajectories to try to make that happen in New York City. The second way in which we're making food more accessible to people is in terms of infrastructural changes we've made in relation to how we transport food or get food from our food rescue facility into homes in New York City. These graphs shows you in terms of those partners we walk on the ground. We walk with a number of hundreds of partners in the five neighborhoods we're mostly in, trying to make food much more accessible to New York City residents. As you can see, a number of partners grew from 434 in 2012, which is before Hurricane Sandy, to 464 during Sandy. The 464 includes about 70 temporary or short-term pop-up sites that came about as a result of Sandy itself. These were people who, organizations that approached us, indicating an interest in wanting to work with us to make food much more accessible to those who needed it during the shock itself. That number has dropped to 347 in 2012, and I'll talk a little bit more about why we experienced that drop. It's resulted from a process, an ongoing process we have that allows us to routinely assess our partners, our community-based partners, who are mostly food pantries, soup kitchens, as well as faith-based organizations and kosher initiatives in the city to try to make sure that food is readily available to those who need it. And so through this process of routinely assessing those partners to determine their capacity to be able to distribute food rapidly and efficiently and reducing waste as a result, we've experienced a number of agencies either disengaging from the partnership or City Harvest deliberately dropping them from the process because they were not meeting their capacity or maximizing their potential to be able to do what we need them to do. I mentioned that we had about 70 additional partners who joined us during Hurricane Sandy to try to expedite food distribution to residents during the crisis. And those partners, some of them stayed on, a few of them stayed on, but most of them have since dropped out from our food distribution process. And the reason why many of them did drop out is, again, what I referred to previously about our routine process of making sure that, you know, we have ready and able community partners that can get this food readily out to people when they need it. At the neighborhood level, we also experience an increase in terms of the amount of food we have distributed to our community partners. as you can see from this graph, places like Staten Island, like which Michael previously mentioned, experienced the most impact in devastation in terms of Sandy itself. And they also experienced the most amount of food we had to give during that period. Places also like Brooklyn, pretty close to the water, also experienced a great deal of problems during Sandy and saw an increase in the amount of food they got from us. This next graph shows you in terms of transportation. I mentioned this is how we're making sure that food is getting to the neighborhoods as quickly as possible. We have increased our fleet size from 18 before Sandy to 20 now. During Sandy, we had 27, and that does not include the trucks we had to rent during Sandy itself to try to get food out to people. I'll talk about this a little bit more later on, but we were not immune from Sandy itself. City has experienced some problems also during the a hurricane, leading to a fleet of trucks being destroyed. And so we had to replace that fleet, which in a way was a blessing because it allows us to actually get brand new trucks to make this happen and make it happen in a much more efficient and time-sensitive manner. The second dimension of food from the World Food Program is food availability, and how do we make this happen? World Food Program defines food availability as, you know, people having sufficient quantities of food to be able to meet their daily food requirements. And we do this through four major ways. We've increased the pounds of food we make available in communities. We're serving more and more people, we're finding, and also we're supporting our community partners through grants to help them rebuild or maintain their infrastructure, as well as doing the same thing in-house. We've, as I mentioned previously, we've had to change our fleet of trucks, increase the fleet of trucks we have to make this happen, as well as make some infrastructural changes in terms of our computer system. In terms of the pounds of food we've delivered, numbers have grown, as I mentioned, from 40 million before Sandy to 46 million after. During Sandy itself, we delivered over 52 million pounds of food to low-income residents in the city. Of that 52 million pounds, about 8 million pounds of that actually went specifically to Sandy relief. We're also serving more people in the city. In FY14, for instance, which is after Sandy, we gave out about 60 million meals of food or had 60 million visits to our community partners, people coming in and indicating that they needed food and being provided food by our community partners. During Sandy itself, the number was also 60 million, but that number excludes the 70 sites that I previously mentioned that came to us and indicated an interest in working with us to try to get food out much more expeditiously to residents. So 60 million you see on the screen there does not include the numbers of people or residents who showed up at those 70 sites. So our numbers during Sandy was much more higher than that. I mentioned that we give our grants to our community partners to try to help them either rebuild, maintain, or sustain their infrastructure. And this is all towards making sure that they are always, at any given time, maximizing their capacity to be able to get food out to community residents. And so, on average, we give out annually between 150 to 155,000. And as you can see on the slide there, during Sandy, we gave out close to $900,000. And much of that money coming from the National Red Cross that provided us some money to try to make this happen. A lot of people having lost their homes, having lost their ability to get around, having lost their ability to cook, and so we gave out close to $723,000 specifically for Sandy relief effort to residents as well as our community partners, jumping from 151,000 before Sandy itself. Another way we make food much more readily available to residents is what we've done in-house ourselves. During the 3 years in review, we have, as I mentioned previously, overhauled our fleet. We've also overhauled our computer system, which is a method by which we track the amounts of food that are being sourced into our warehouse, our food food delivery warehouse. And we've also, the system we now have in place actually now allows us to be able to not only track where our trucks are at any given time, but also be able to estimate how much food each of our community partners has the capacity to be able to give out. And this is based on tracking trend data over time. And so that's one of the benefits from coming from, you know, our ability to be able to look at our in-house processes to try to make sure that we're meeting the needs of people and meeting those needs at a time when they need it. We've also been able to fix our food resource facility such that, you know, we have a much more bigger refrigeration system or storage system that allows us to be able to safely store those foods before they're picked up by the trucks and taken out into the communities. The third dimension from the World Food Program is food utilization, which they define as people being able to have nutritious food. It's not enough to give out food, but you also want to make sure that the food that it's giving out is nutritional enough to be able to mean something. You don't obviously want to address the issue of food access from and leave out the fact that when people experience food insecurity, it does tend to lead to things like obesity and the like. And so, how are we addressing that? We do that through two things. One is we focus mostly on nutrient-dense food, and we also give out as much as we can food that has longer shelf space. This next graph shows you, as a routine or as a practice, we give out 60% of the food we give out is mostly fresh produce, followed by prepackaged food, you know, foods that have longer shelf space and people can store and hold those for much longer. And we give out dairy as well as bakery goods. These are the most frequently distributed food as far as our fresh produce is concerned, from things like white potatoes to carrots, cabbage, and the like. And again, a lot of this food we scale back on slightly during Sandy, giving out more prepackaged food because without power, without the ability to cook, you can obviously expect people to store things like this much longer. So this graph shows you, during Sandy, we gave out more than an additional 4 million pounds of prepackaged food to New York City residents. The last dimension is food stability. How do we address that in New York City? World Food Program defines this as the ability of people or organizations to be able to recover after a shock. And we work with our community partners towards this goal by doing three things. One is we provide ongoing technical assistance as well as training. We also do what I briefly mentioned previously, a process of continually assessing our community partners to determine their capacity to do what we want them to, what we need them to do, which is to distribute more food and to do so in a timely manner to a community resident. The last thing which I talked about earlier on is that we give our grants to our partners to make sure that they need and they have the infrastructure to be able to do this much more efficiently. In terms of the technical assistance and training we give out, we provide to our partners, we host workshops that are targeted towards the things that have been identified or the barriers that have been identified specific to those partners in relation to shoring them up to do, to provide more food to community residents. And so topics might range from things like strategic planning to budgeting, you know, their leadership structure. Do they have a succession plan in place? Are they maximizing their ability to, you know, provide more food to residents? We have a process we call agency growth potential assessment, and this is where we work, as I mentioned, with partners, assessing the ability to be able to not only accept food from us, but also be able to give them out without wasting or losing part of that food due to wastage. And so we have this process that allows us to look at each agency or each partner in terms of a number of criteria. How much food do they give out? How many people are they serving? Have they maximized their physical space to be able to accept food and be able to give them out? Do they have a functional board structure? Do they have the money to continue to do this without the grants we give out? This diagram shows you what that process looks like. We worked with McKinsey Consulting Company. They came up with an algorithm that allowed us to be able to look at those partners or look at those agencies, and based on a range of characteristics of the things that I just mentioned previously, we're able to classify them or segment them based on these five categories. They're either a Tier 1 agency or a Tier 5 agency, depending on a number of things like how many pounds of food they distribute, how quickly they get them out, what they look like in terms of their budgeting or their ability to be able to sustain their activities, even when City Harvest can't provide that food to them or provide the funds to them. And as the diagram shows, you see that the poundage of food ranges from things like those agencies that can provide 400,000 pounds of food to those who can provide up to 260,000 pounds of food to 1.3 million pounds of food. What we found was that most of our agencies tended to cluster around Tier 2 and Tier 3, and this is because many of them have already maximized their ability to be able to do what they are doing, and so there's only so much they can go. And so you find a lot of them clustering around Tiers 2 and Tier 3, which means that, you know, this is the physical space they have, this is how much they can do, they can give out, and they can move beyond that. And this just gives you, in a nutshell, you know, what our approach looks like in terms of how we're addressing food access, food availability, utilization, and stability. Ultimately, we hope that through our ongoing capacity assessment process, we can work and hopefully be able to identify some pockets of strength within those communities that will, you know, hopefully build up you know, a base for people in those communities to continue to receive food, even when City Harvest is not there. So what lessons have we learned from Sandy? Hurricanes can happen in New York City. That was a big lesson. Who knew? We also realized that we had to come up with a plan that allows us to readily get food out to residents who live in high-rises. What we found through our data collection process is that we tend to mostly serve seniors, and many of the seniors live in high-rises. And so if the elevators are not working because lights are out, how do you get food to them, especially when they can't come down or go upstairs? So we had to come up with a plan that, you know, addresses this. How do we address that? The other thing we also realized was that we needed to have an emergency preparedness plan, not just for us as an organization, but also working with each of those over 400 or 300 partners that we have in those communities, so that they have one in place that allows them to continue to do this much more efficiently. And that's it.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?